Final hour of the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Anthony, I cannot believe it's 6 o'clock already. I literally looked up at the corner of my laptop to see what time it was, and I was like, I'm sorry, what? Like, I know the segment we just did. We did Around the NFL, which we do every Friday at 5:30. I'm in disbelief that it is 6 o'clock. This show has absolutely flown by.
Time flies when you're having fun, man. It is a football. I'm not going to lie. These Fridays be flying by, man. I don't know what it is. They flying, though.
They are flying. We got more analysis of the Commanders. How can their offense match up with this Giants defense? We'll talk about it coming up at 6:30. Take command style to wrap up our preview show. But what we do at 6 o'clock is a little thing we like to call the Pick 6.
The six biggest Commander storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the Pick 6 at 6.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level, build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
All right, here's how this goes. Our Pick 6 on Fridays, Wednesdays and Thursdays, we give you the top headlines of the day. Fridays, we pick six players, three from me, three from Anthony, who we think are most interesting to watch on Sunday in preparation for the Commanders matchup. So who do we have our eyes on Sunday? And Anthony, I have a quick question for you. We used to do this slightly differently, where we would pick the six players we are most intrigued by in terms of like who's most important to the Commanders win. Now that we're doing most interesting players, should we also make opposing players eligible? Like, can I pick a Giant that I think will have a huge impact that I'm watching, and then we can talk about it from the Commander's perspective of like who is responsible for stopping them potentially?
I like that. That's a nice little twist, you know?
I don't know nothing. They didn't give me this job out of charity.
I think we can do that.
I like that twist, too. Okay, I like that twist, too. We're going to roll with it.
So can I do that as well?
That would be really funny if I said no. I'm just like, yeah, it's just me. No, of course you can. But I get to go first this week because you went first last week. So with that, Anthony, please tee up for me.
Number one.
There we go. Number one is number 97. Number 97 in blue, and that is Dexter Lawrence. Dexter Lawrence is probably the best player on the field on Sunday. He is a monstrous nose tackle. It's really interesting. You'll hear Logan talk about this in Take Command coming up at 6:30. He is not, like, he doesn't have some of the physical, like, freakish traits that, like, Warren Sapp had or even Vita Vea. Like, he just gets the job done. Like, he's brutally strong. He plays with a high motor. I would imagine if you're an offensive lineman, he's one of your least fun days at work all season long. And so it's going to take multiple people to deal with him. Obviously, it starts with Tyler Biadasz at center. Both guards are going to be a huge deal here. Cliff Kingsbury is going to have to make sure that their run game is aware of where he is, you know, and you go from there. He is easier to block in terms of assignment than Vita Vea because Vea moved around a lot more. He's more of a penetrator. Lawrence is more of what Logan you'll hear him call a read player, where he can kind of just hold up and be like, okay, which way are you going? Now I'm going to take this 300-pound man, throw him out of the way, and go whichever way the play is going, versus Vea, who kind of forces the issue. Both are extremely difficult to play against because they both do their job really well, but they go about doing it differently. And so is there a way to take advantage of that? Is there a way to neutralize him? He's also an effective pass rusher. The perimeter run game feels like a good play. I also think there's some stuff schematically that will become really important. I'll get to that with my next guy. But I'm going to say the most important player that could, like, he's the guy that could wreck the game the most for the Commanders is Dexter Lawrence. So the first ever opposing player in a Pick 6 is Big Sexy Dexy, 97 in blue.
I love the pick. And, you know, Tom Brady, he usually says it's not necessarily the edge defenders that, you know, give him the most problems. It's the push up the middle. And I think Sexy Dexy, like, he can do it all. He can stop the run. He can push the pocket. And then when you have edges on the outside, like Kayvon and Brian Burns, it just presents a huge problem. And it's probably a good thing that they've resorted to just allowing the front four to, you know, get pressure on the quarterback. But yeah, here's my number two.
Number two.
My number two. So I'm not going to go defensive tackle on the Giants. I'm going to go defensive tackle on the Commanders. And I'm going to go with Daron Payne. I think last week we saw a lot of missed opportunities. He had a chance at a sack. John Allen also had a chance at a sack or two. And I did some research, Craig. In the last seven games.
Anthony's coming to research. Look at this guy.
A little something. Daniel Jones, he's been sacked in his last seven games 35 times. And I think if we can, you know, add to that, I think it's going to start with Daron Payne and John Allen. I think Daron Payne is going to have a little bit more of an advantage just because of how quick he is when it comes to, you know, getting off his block. So I think Daron Payne is poised to have a big game against Daniel Jones. And I think this week they're just going to capitalize on all those missed opportunities they had last week.
I think that is a great pick. I think I've said this now for quite a while. I mean, going back to the summer, I mean, frankly, I said it last year too, especially when John was hurt. I think Daron Payne's been a better player for a couple years at this point. And when we did our top 10 countdown of most important Commanders this summer, I put Allen ahead of Payne because I think they can find ways to move Payne around and potentially create some matchups. Week one, it didn't necessarily happen, and it might take a while for them to really experiment with it. Obviously last week it was Luvu and Armstrong and those guys on the edge, and I do think once Johnny Newton is back, which looks unlikely this weekend, Keim reporting that, and Dan Quinn was non-committal, I think when Newton comes back, it becomes easier to do this because you can have really good quality inside, not have a huge drop off, and have Payne on the outside. But I wonder if eventually he lines up some at like defensive end. Imagine like Frankie Luvu body type on one edge against the tackle, and then Daron Payne on another, and the next third down they switch. Like, there's some funky stuff they could get to, but I think Payne is such a stud what he does, and I think that his Giants offensive line is a lot better, but there still are some spots inside that, you could take advantage of. And I think Payne could play a huge role this weekend. I mean, they've had games where Allen, like, wasn't there a game they had like 9 sacks against the Giants not that long ago? Like, they've gotten after Daniel Jones quite a bit at times, and Jones has been able to beat them anyway with some big plays, if I'm thinking of the right game. So, because the Giants offensive line was terrible last year. So it's better. But I think Payne plays a huge role on Sunday.
Number three.
So I mentioned I would get to some other interesting, you know, ways to help in protection and some different personnel packages that I like for the Commanders with my next guy. My next guy is someone who I think is going to be a great player for this team, but was very quiet in his debut. And that is Ben Sinnott, tight end number 82. Here's why I think that they could have this could be a big Ben Sinnott week. And I think Ertz, Sinnott, and Bates will be out there quite a bit. The Giants are banged up in the secondary. Some of their corners are banged up. But they are also banged up at linebacker, and Micah McFadden, I don't think, is going to play. So if the Giants, without their second-best inside linebacker, are going to be light at that position, you want to get them in heavier personnel with a backup linebacker out there. How do you do that? Multiple tight ends on the field. So with Ben Sinnott's versatility, you can be in 13 personnel and have Zach Ertz, or even 12 personnel with Ertz and Sinnott, no John Bates, 13, 3 tight ends, all 3 of them together. Now, definitely New York's going to probably match that in base, and now you've got a backup linebacker on the field. And even though he's a rookie, I'll take Ben Sinnott. Or if you can get him matched up, Zach Ertz against a backup linebacker. Bobby Okereke is real good, but he's only one dude. And so I think using some heavier personnel is a really good way. And then, like, let's get on the perimeter. And if the Giants want to match that in nickel and dime, then, like, let's get our tight ends out there. If I'm Cliff Kingsbury, and have them crush defensive backs, and let's get on the edge and run a little bit with Jaden and with the running backs. But let's run away from Dexter Lawrence. And if they're going to match that in base, well, now we feel good throwing out of that because we have Ertz and Sinnott that are good pass catching tight ends. Bates has come on. That part of his game has grown a little bit over the past couple of years. He's not great, but if he's on their third best guy to cover a tight end, that's not necessarily not an advantage for Washington either. So I think that could be a huge personnel grouping for them this weekend, is using that 13 or even that 12, and Sinnott could be a bigger part of it. Also, like, hey, let's get a fullback in there and kind of, you know, seal off an edge here if Dexter Lawrence gets any penetration. There's not a lot of plays where that probably is going to happen, but who knows? I think Sinnott could have a bigger role this weekend than he did in his debut because of the Giants' injury situation and some of the personnel groupings that Cliff is going to want to use and his versatility. So Ben Sinnott, number two for me, number three overall in our pick six.
Number four, I'm sort of kind of torn, but I think I'm going to go with Noah Igbinoghene / Michael Davis. I think these are the guys that are going to be filling in for Emmanuel Forbes. And I was really surprised that we didn't see any of Michael Davis last weekend. But I think based off, you know, how long Emmanuel Forbes is going to have to be out, I think this is a good chance for us to, you know, see what our cornerback depth is. And also, that is one of our weaknesses on the defensive side of the ball. So I just feel as though it's going to be important to, you know, see how we, or what technique and things of that sort are being taught to those guys to, you know, combat what Daniel Jones is going to want to do. I think I read somewhere where his, like, yards to his target was like 4.5 yards or something like that. So I think just being able to, like, understand that and, you know, see if those guys are coachable, I think is going to be huge.
Yeah, his ADOT was not very good in week one, average depth of target. But he will, like, it was interesting watching the tape. Like, there's definitely some big play hunting that Daniel Jones does, right? Like, there's some design stuff that's a lot closer to the line of scrimmage that brings that number down. And then there's times that Jones will stand in the pocket and, like, hunt big plays. And sometimes he's taking sacks. And so you might be looking for a big play and get 0 yards depth of target credit for it because you get sacked. Or you have to throw the ball away at the last second. So I do think it's important to clarify that the results of his ADOT, his depth of target, were not very good. But it's not because they're not looking for explosives. Also, in a lot of the intermediate game, this is, you know, when they do get some of these targets off, like, he's a tick slow. I think the corners in this game are really, really important because I think there's going to be, like, you're facing Daniel Jones. You're going to have possibilities of getting interceptions. This team did not create the turnovers that they wanted to in preseason / in training camp. They did not create a turnover in week one. I do not think they win this football game without creating at least one turnover. Their opportunities are going to present themselves. Please take advantage of them. Which brings me to my last guy I want to mention, Anthony.
Number five.
To wrap up the pick six, and that is Quan Martin. Quan certainly could be a guy that has opportunities to make those plays. But last year, you know, Quan played really well last year. And I think by the end of the year, right? Early season, not very good. He had way too much on his plate. That was a coaching failure far more than it was a player failure. They simplified some stuff. They got him in one position. He played a lot better at the end of the year. He's playing fast. He's playing physical. He was grading out pretty well. And as long as, I don't know, you didn't have him matched up against Tyreek Hill one-on-one in a terrible alignment, then he did all right. But there were some times last year in some of these games earlier in the season where Quan's issue wasn't necessarily, I guess it was that inexperience and having too much on his plate, but it ultimately came down to communication, where he was involved in some of the blown coverages last year with Emmanuel Forbes, with some of the other guys, but the constant in some of those was Quan. And last week we saw it with Quan and Mike Sainer still. And that's not to say that all of these are Quan's fault, but as the safety here, as the guy in the middle of the defense doing a lot of communicating, he can help fix it. And I think that's a really important distinction. It might not be his fault. The rules might have said Mike Sainer still was supposed to go run with Jalen McMillan up the sideline, and he's the one that messed it up, not Quan. I don't know what their rules are. I don't know whose fault that was. But better communication means we never find out that there was a mistake made in the first place. There's mistakes made in football games all the time defensively that we never know about because they are covered with good communication. And so as, you know, the Giants will inevitably watch the Tampa tape and use some stacks, use some bunches, use some trips formations, use things with switch releases where they have routes running into each other and they're going to require communication, especially on third downs in man-to-man situations for the Commanders. Can they finally break the streak of years where they have struggled with that kind of stuff? Think of all the teams that crushed them with mesh concepts, just receivers running past each other in the middle of the field, dudes getting lost on third downs for years and years. Like the third down defense for years under Del Rio had similar bugaboos. I do not think this is the same defense. There is a lot of stuff on tape that is more nuanced than any fan cares about that suggests they're already better on a lot of fundamentals. But the big mistakes have been the same through 1 week. Quan Martin was at the center of a few of them. I would love to see him start to solidify the communication part of his game. As Joe Witt said yesterday, communication is not just about what's said, it's about what's received and acknowledged. So everyone's on the same page. Quan Martin, I think he gets a pick this weekend. I'm calling it. Calling a pick for Quan Martin. Go out and make a play. Quan, it's your time.
Let's get it, man.
Number six.
Number six, Craig. This one might surprise you. But I'm going with the kicker who we just signed this week.
That's a great call. I can't believe we haven't talked about the kicker more this week.
Austin Seibert. I think we're kicker fatigue, to be honest. Like, there have been so many kickers that have come here, been here, you know, for a couple of weeks, you know, or a couple of games. And it's more so we got to figure out if this guy is our kicker for the short term, maybe the long term. But I think he's going to be important just because we saw how important Kay York's missed field goals were last week in terms of, like, how successful the offense is. So I think Austin Seibert, he has some big some little shoes to fill, I guess, coming in here for his first game against the Giants.
Yeah, and look, I think it's deeper than that, too. Like, so Seibert's career, he's perfect under 40 yards. He does not have a big leg. And so over 40 yards, his percentage is really poor. He's only 2 for 6 career from 50. I think he's like 17 of 24 or something, 40 to 49.
Mm-hmm.
So it not only is it just like the obvious of like, hey, dude, do you make the kicks that you're sent out for? How does this affect the strategy? Like, Dan Quinn was really conservative last week. 56-yarder for Cade York. Hey, he's got a big leg. Send him out there. Like, those were situations, 47-yarder. You could have easily gone for it. It was like 4th and 3, you know, 4th and relatively short, 4th and gettable in areas of the field where a lot of coaches are going for it. You know, obviously kick coverage. If you can't just say, hey, automatic, this is a touchback. If you decide you're at a point where you don't want to mess with a return, Austin Seibert can't guarantee you a touchback based off what his leg was. I think I read he hit a 52-yarder in the preseason with the Jets. So maybe he's been working on it, you know, getting stronger as you go in your career. But he is not Joey Sly. He is not Cade York. He is not these guys that can just, you know, with Dustin Hopkins, you should be able to do, just boom the ball through the end zone whenever told to. Mm-hmm. And so from a kick coverage standpoint, the potential for explosive plays there, although Gunnar Olszewski, the punt returner for the Giants, is out. I don't know if he was returning kicks for them too, but just a note. And fourth down decisions, when you're above 40-yard field goals, how does this affect it? That is definitely something to keep an eye on from a strategy standpoint on Sunday. All right, when we get back into the X's and the O's and the Dex's and the O's, why Dexter Lawrence is the key to the Giants' defense and how Cliff Kingsbury can plan around him. Logan dives into the tape. Take command preview to wrap us up here on The Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And not only do I host this show, as I'm Craig Hoffman here, you probably guessed the whole Hoffman Show thing, but host a podcast with Logan Paulson. You probably know that by now. It's called Take Command. Logan, of course, 10 years in the NFL, including 6 here in Washington, one of the smartest dudes breaking down the game. And on Fridays, we're going to end the show with giving you some of his analysis. What does he see on this New York Giants defense? If you want the full breakdown of the Giants offense and kind of what we feel in general, bigger picture going into week one, definitely check out Take Command wherever you get your pods this weekend. But for the defense, you don't have to go anywhere. Just keep listening right now. If you want to see really good personnel up front for the Giants, well, let me introduce you to Dexter Lawrence and his friends. The Giants defense is they've got some dudes on that side of the ball. Obviously, Kevin O'Connell and Justin Jefferson and crew did a great job last week to be able to handle it. They were able to neutralize what they needed to neutralize, get JJ the ball where they needed to. He got in the end zone. Everybody gritty. If you're doing, I ask you the same question, but now you're Cliff Kingsbury. What's the scouting report for this New York Giants team this week, and where does it start?
Yeah, for me, it starts with obviously Dexter Lawrence. We'll get to him in 1 second, but Shane Bowen is the new defensive coordinator there. So it feels so much different than it did last year. Last year, it's like the craziest, most unsound pressures, and you're just like, this guy, you know, this can't be like a real thing we're seeing because they're just bringing everybody, and this guy's looping in the same gap, and just bombs over Baghdad. Comparatively, this is an extremely conservative defense. It feels very similar to like Bill Belichick from like 2005. You know what I mean? It's like, we're going to play quarters. We're going to play a little cover two. We're going to play six. We're going to match. And then much like Belichick, they are a little bit of a game plan team. So they're going to kind of say like, what do you do well? How do we take it away? And I think that that's going to be a really interesting chess match between Cliff. Like, what is he like, if I'm Cliff, I'm thinking, what does he know about us based on week one? How do I prevent him from taking that away? Like Jaden's scrambling ability, like, are they going to change their rush path? Are they going to blitz more? Are they going to use a spy? Like, if I'm Shane Bowen after watching last week, I'm throwing in some of those pressures that they ran in Tampa Bay just to see if we got it locked up. You know what I mean? We had some free runners. We had some issues with some line stunts in terms of Wiley and Cosme on different levels. Like, let's throw that at them, see if they got it fixed. And so if I'm Cliff, I'm like, okay, how do we do that? What coverages gave us an issue? How do we beat man-to-man? Because we had a little bit of an issue. Jaden did in certain situations with that. So I would expect that maybe a little bit more than last week, but I'd say at its core, the defense is a little bit simpler. Like, they're going to have a wrinkle for you, but on the whole, it's a little bit simpler. So I think that's advantageous for Jaden Daniels. Now, you mentioned the front, and like, you know, Dexter Lawrence, I know he doesn't get talked about in the same way as like Chris Jones and Micah Parsons, but he statistically is one of the most dominant defensive players in the NFL over the last 3 years. And like, when you watch the game, you watch Minnesota's offense, like, he's creating sacks, he's creating TFLs, like, he just is able to do a lot. And when you look at his body type, it doesn't make a lot of sense because he's 6'5", he's 350. He doesn't move. He's not like lightning quick. He's just a bear. Like, he's just, I've never seen a guy consistently overpower offensive linemen the way he does and just push the pocket and create pressures. So he's, to me, he's the problem. And I know people talk about Burns on the edge and Kayvon Thibodeau, and I think they're very good athletes, but they haven't, to me, lived up to the name just yet. Like, I know Kayvon Thibodeau had 10 sacks last year. I think six of them were against third string offensive linemen, like, just from different teams because of injury things over the course of the season. Against good players, he doesn't really show up. That's not to say he won't.
He also, for whatever reason, had Charles Leno's number. Like, that was just a great matchup for him.
Like, he just had a good feel for it, for sure.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously Burns, like, is this guy that has this great reputation because LA was going to trade two first round picks for him a couple years ago. He's got athletic pass rush juice. It doesn't always kind of lead to production. And I was talking to somebody about that. It's like, how do you kind of weigh and scout those guys? And they were like, well, because of Dexter Lawrence, it changes their dynamic. Because Dexter's going to push the pocket. The quarterback's going to want to step back. And you're going to get a lot more sacks of those guys running high on the edge, which I didn't even think about because of that one guy in the middle's ability to disrupt. So I think that's something that I'm definitely going to be watching because Jaden, you know, the one fumble that he had, you can say the first one, you know, where he lateral fumble, whatever.
The one
that he had, like, at the, what was that, the 40-yard line. He gets a little bit of pressure internally. He steps back in the pocket and the ball gets out. And I think, like, you got to be hyper aware because it's going to, like, that's how their pressure is going to feel almost every time. Pressure up the middle because he's really good, Dexter. And those guys are just racing to that spot. So don't step back. And how do we handle that if as a young player kind of dealing with different rush patterns?
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I, you know, kind of noticed the more I watched last week back too is, and this was kind of his rep coming in, Biotish is really, really solid, but he's not like he's not the strongest guy in terms of moving people. Mm-hmm. And obviously trying to move Vita Vea is a task for that nobody can accomplish. And Dexter Lawrence, like, that just sucks if you're Tyler Biotish. You sign with the Commanders, you're like, okay, cool. I'm excited. DQ is my guy in Dallas. All right, let's see what this schedule looks like. Cool. Weeks 1 and 2, I get Vita Vea and Dexter Lawrence.
Yeah.
What?
Two of the best, like, pure noses in
right.
the NFL.
You don't see many nose tackles, period. And then you get those two jokers back-to-back weeks one and two. So what can Kliff and Bobby Johnson do to help Biotish out, not only in the pass rush situations, but also if one of the solutions is going to be to run the football to make sure they can get the movement that they need up front? Because, you know, Vea was able to kind of stunt some of that stuff last week just because he's so freaking big and hard to move.
Well, we'll say the one thing that I thought Tyler Biotish had a pretty good game. You know, I'm not saying, you know, I agree that, like, that's a tough matchup, but I was.
It's not like he lost a ton. It's just like he's going to move people in a way later this year when it's not Vita Vea, in a way that he was not able to move Vita Vea because Vita Vea is an actual mountain of a man.
Yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying. I think I just wanted to point out so fans aren't thinking that he's playing bad, but
right.
It's like. What I would say, the thing about Tampa Bay that's tough is they're always moving around, like in the front, they're always stunting. And the Giants don't, at least in the first game, and again, they might be like, oh, that was really successful, let's stunt more, right? But at least based on what we saw week one, they didn't stunt a lot. And so when you know kind of your landmarks and your targets, it's a little bit easier to overtake. And I will say this about Dexter Lawrence, the way he's playing the nose, like Vita Vea is a little bit more aggressive up the field, just a little bit. Dexter plays it pretty square. Like he's like a true read player almost. And it's surprising he's so effective as a pass rusher because you'd be like, that shouldn't work. But because of that, he's not firing off the line of scrimmage. So usually that lets the center, especially a quick kind of undersized center, but a quicker center like Biotish, get the snap off and get into him before he can really get going. So there's times, like, even though, again, Dexter Lawrence is, again, one of the better defensive players in the NFL, where guys can sink double teams on him really well. They're not creating this great vertical movement, but they can sink the double team and at least get him off the spot in a way that you're not going to see with Vita Vea, because Vita Vea is going to stunt from the nose to the opposite A. He's going to stunt from the shade to the B. Like, and he just, because of that movement, it makes it harder to really sink those doubles. So I think this matchup generally favors, but that type of stuff, those little details, also favor the Commanders as opposed to week one, which was pretty tough.
Obviously, the weakest point, relatively speaking, of the Giants defense is on the back end. How does Kliff take advantage of that? And what specific matchups do you like for Washington if they can get the protection and all the stuff up front? Right.
Yeah, well, I think the thing when you look at the depth chart for the Giants, and when you watch him play, I think Banks is a good player, good athlete, good physicality, but he's young. Naben from Minnesota, the guy they drafted from Minnesota, rookie. He's a rookie starting
Newbin,
safety.
Yeah.
No, Newbin. Yeah, thank you. So in the other corner starts with an F, Flott, something like that.
Yeah.
He also a young player. So they have, again, some of the same issues that the Commanders have. They have in the back end. So what I would do is I would be like, how do we test your rules? Like, how do we make sure you're lining up correctly to a bunch, to a motion? Like, what's happening there? And I think when you watch the Minnesota game, you were talking about how how effectively that game was called by Minnesota staff. Like, a lot of it is they're shifting, they're motioning, they're getting good matchups, they're hitting stuff on the move. And I think there's an element of that. So, you know, I've talked about how Kliff in training camp had more motions, had more shifts. I think this would be a decent game. I'm not saying go shift motion crazy. It needs to be every play. But, you know, in critical down and distance, like, let's see if you're paying attention. Let's see if you were paying attention in the install on Monday, like, or on Wednesday, if you're the Giants secondary guys. And again, they have not played a lot of football together. So how do they communicate certain things? Like, test those rules the way that Tampa Bay tested us week one. So I agree. I think they've got some good athletes in the back end. I think the nickel player is a good player. The kid from Kentucky, they've got some good football players back there, but, like, they're young. So let's make them work for it a little bit and see what they know and test their communication skills a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting too. You talk about them not playing a lot of football together. I was just clicking through a couple of plays in NFL Pro, and they have who's on the field for each one, and like they even mixed up their corners last week. Like, you got some Adoree Jackson, you got some Deontay Banks, you got some Cordell Flott, you got some Tyler Newbin, you got some Andrew Phillips. So like they had a bunch of guys go in and out of the game last week. So you talk about those reps together. There's only so much that they've stacked those through week one in a new defense, and can they take advantage? I was gonna say let's go a little bit deeper to wrap up here on some of the motion and that kind of stuff, because that becomes one of the big things. Like, Terry lined up on the left 87% of the time. Oh, they only use motion so much. I do wonder sometimes when some of that stuff is auto-populated, only because I felt like I felt like Cliff actually used a decent amount of motion, not like a ton. It's not as intentional as like McDaniels, right? Like there's some of those like jet motions and those short motions right before the snap. Cliff's is more of like, hey, we're going to line up here. All right, jog across motion. Let's see if we can get a man zone read. Like it's a lot of information gathering, but I sorted NFL Pro. Sorry, NFL Pro. There's at least one mistake in your sorting mechanism because it was like only 9 plays with motion. And then I was like, okay, let me go to the plays that don't have motion. And the first one I watched had motion. So I don't know what the actual percentages was, but I feel like there was a little bit more than maybe some of the numbers would suggest based off of the fact that if it's being calculated off what I just described, then they missed at least one. But point being, Logan, that it was week one. There is more in the bag. We have seen some like full formation shifts. We have seen some jet motions and you know, we didn't see any end arounds or jet sweeps last week either. That's certainly in based off what we saw in training camp as a possibility. So how like does, I guess the fan version of this question would be like, does Cliff need to do some of that stuff that guys like McDaniel and Shanahan and O'Connell are doing, or is he able to accomplish it through other methods, like some of the similar stuff that is more in line with how Cliff's like the identity of who Cliff is as an OC?
Yeah, so I think if you're calling or designing a play, you got to ask why you would motion. Don't just motion to motion. Like I think, you know, when Scott Turner was here, like I think they were like the third team in terms of motion usage in the NFL, the Commanders. It was something like insanely high. Maybe it was like top 10. And everyone's like, oh, that means it's a healthy offense. That's a sign of a good offense. But there wasn't that intentionality you were talking about, you know, like with the motion. It was like, oh, we're going to bring this guy back. And it's like, why are we doing it? Like, what's the point? So I don't want to motion to motion because motion does create convoluted looks, or it can create a lot of convoluted looks in the secondary. When it's a static picture, I know where everybody's at. So I think that's the thing. It's like, we talked about it last year with Sam Howell and Eric Bieniemy. It's like, maybe Sam doesn't want a motion. Maybe he has a hard time seeing it. And so if you're doing, like, why are you doing it? What's the motivation behind the motion? I think that's always what fans have to ask themselves. If it's just like when you watch Mike McDaniels, every motion is doing something, right? I'm going to motion out. You got to expand with me because you're backing up. That little out underneath is always there for you, right? Like whatever it is. I think you can do stuff formationally that'll give you similar results to motion. I personally think motion is very effective. Again, my background is in this like West Coast Kyle Shanahan. We're going to move around, test you guys all the time. But you can do stuff formationally from a personnel standpoint to test them too, right? So for example, if we put a running back, a receiver, and a tight end in a bunch, who is in the bunch now? Who's in the coverage? If we're playing man coverage, I probably have a linebacker, a safety, and a corner. But if we cross release, then we cannot just play straight man on that because we're going to get picks. So like now I've got a running back on a corner, I've got a receiver on a linebacker, and a tight end on a safety again, or whatever, however that works out. And that's an advantage for us offensively. So I think there needs to be enough variety, like tight bunches, full splits, you know, motions and shifts to keep the defense unsettled. Like what you don't want is a settled defense. And there are multiple different ways to do that. Like even getting in 4x1, like Cliff did a couple times in the game, like that is not a conventional look. And you're going to have a lot of communication about where we need to go to like make sure we're matching that effectively, right? And not leaving this poor corner on the backside one-on-one. So I think there's a couple different things. Again, I think a little bit more motions probably in the future, maybe not this week, but definitely I'd say in the next 4 or 5 weeks, you'll see more motion from Cliff as Jaden Daniels gets more comfortable, as he gets a better feel for the defense. Because that's the other thing, is sometimes early in the season, you don't know what the defense's answer is versus motion. And you don't want to get them out of a good look because you're trying to motion. If that makes sense, right?
Let's say you line up, you get what you want, and now we've motioned and ruined it.
Yeah, or like we're motioning to the look we want, right? But they don't play it the same way, or it confuses the defender so bad that he's in the throwing window. You don't want that sometimes, right? Like it's not always advantageous. So I think as Cliff gets more comfortable with the responses to motion, as he gets more comfortable with what Jaden knows, I think that'll increase. But I think in the meantime, you'll see stuff like personnel-wise, bunch full width stuff, you know, overloads pre-snap, that'll be probably a staple. And then as they get more comfortable, motion will probably sprinkle a bit more.
All right, if you want the full breakdown, including the other side of the ball when the Commanders are on defense and Daniel Jones is doing whatever Daniel Jones decides to do this weekend, you got to check out Take Command. Good news, it's available for you whenever you want. It's the beauty of a podcast. You can check it out right now if you want to go lock into that. If you want to wait till this weekend, whatever you got, check out Take Command wherever you get your pods, including on YouTube if you'd like to watch us at the Team 980. When we get back, we'll wrap up this here radio show and send you on your way into the weekend. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. It is Friday. We're looking forward to the weekend. And we're not going to forget to pick the Commanders game on the radio this time, Anthony. That is something we forgot to do last week.
Dang, we really forgot to pick the game last week.
I think so. I think we forgot to pick it at the end of the show. Or do we just do that with Thursday Night Football?
I think Thursday Night Football two weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Okay.
We try to not forget to pick things that we pick. Look, early in the season, we're making adjustments.
Yep.
Maybe this is why I'm so understanding and give in to the actual idea that, like, hey, it's week one, you have two room to improve, all that kind of stuff, because I'm like, I hope that we improve week over week. We're getting back in our rhythms. There's some things we forgot how to do, like remember stuff.
Yep.
So there's that. All right, Anthony, Commanders, Giants, you want me to go first or would you like to go first?
I would like you to go first.
Okay. I'm going to take the Washington Commanders because I think the New York Giants stink. I do not think they're a good football team. I think that realistically their front office knows they're only so good of a football team they're building. Like, the New York Giants are essentially trying to do what the Texans did, which is we're going to build up other stuff so that when we get our quarterback, we're good. And they've got some good pieces, but, like, it's not going to look good until they get a quarterback who can operate. And they don't have that. Daniel Jones, even though he's been awesome in his career against the Commanders, like, he's not even that right now. He just looked so off in week one mentally. Like, I don't think he's got it right now. Is there a chance this is a get-right game? Of course. I don't think the Commanders are world beaters. They're not immune to any of it. But at the end of the day, I think they'll try to heat him up. I think some of the blitz packages will get home. And I think that the Commanders will win their home opener, get to 1-1 on the season, give Dan Quinn his first win as head coach of the Commanders.
Mr. Craig Hoffman?
Yes, sir.
I, too, am going with the Commanders.
We have a lot of similar picks this week.
I know. That's why I had to change, you know, just one. I hope that one was the right one to change.
But you picked the Browns, bro. Probably not, but that's okay.
I know. I'm going with the Commanders to win this one. Daniel Jones just doesn't look the same, and that's probably in large part due to the injury, but also from a processing situation. He hasn't always, you know, been that in the NFL. So I think he continues to, you know, live up to, you know, who he is as a person, and I think his streak against the Washington Commanders is over. He had a good one.
He's got to give, as they say. He is 0-4 in his career against Dan Quinn. He is 5-1-1 in his career against Washington. Both offensive lines improved from last year. That's been kind of a huge defining point of this series the last couple of years. So we'll see ultimately, you know, what happens on Sunday at Northwest Field. I will be there. Logan and I will have post-game coverage on Take Command. So you can watch that live on the Team 980's YouTube page. So make sure you're subscribed at the Team 980, or it will be in your podcast feed as soon as possible afterwards. So just subscribe to Take Command. And if you can't watch us live, you can consume it that way. So however it is that you ultimately want to intake the instant analysis, we will have it. And then, of course, we'll be back on Monday. First and 10 gets us started right at 4 o'clock. Monday shows are always really fun. They're more fun, obviously, if it's a victory Monday. Job done, breaking down the game, whatever happens between the white lines, between the Commanders and Giants. Anthony, do we have a minute and 15 left in the show, or do we have an oddly timed break today?
Minute 15.
Okay, which is now a minute and 10, which means we have time for maybe a real thing, or we just can tell people what our favorite part of the show was today. Either one. I don't know. What's in the real things folder?
We have three things. We have a 30-second one if we want to play that one.
Go.
Real things.
We're not going to be sucked this year.
Real people.
5-11. Not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
No time for context. Just play it, Anthony. Just go.
I cannot wait to watch Jaden Daniels play at the house for the first time of the year. I'm doing this for Coach Quinn. I want Coach Quinn to get his first win. And I want that first win to come at home. Three! I cannot wait to see what this home field advantage looks, feels, and sounds like. Fans, I'm putting it all on you. I'm out.
Who is that?
That was Fred Smoot.
Oh, I should have known. The mouth of the South.
Yes.
That's how we end the week. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you on Monday.